and yelling at Mario. Who are you to psychoanalyze me? I won't even be here next week. Seeing me, Mario holds up a chubby paw and starts the standard teacher line. Nice of you to join us. Skip it, I say. I can't deal with this. Just tell me where to retake the class. Better yet, throw me in jail. Who cares? I'm dripping bathtubs on the floor, so I turn to leave. Mario stops me. You don't have my permission to leave. I stop, glare at him. You're disturbing the class. He tosses me a roll of paper towels. You're required to be here, so dry the floor and yourself and sit down. We'll discuss your future here later. I tear off a wad of towels, throw them onto the linoleum, and move the sopping mess with my sneaker, feeling Leo's black eyes on me. I glare back. Who does he think he is? I am not towel-drying myself in front of this group, and I am not explaining why I'm late, so I take a seat, feeling the blast of air conditioning on my wet t-shirt. I shiver, and there's Leo the Cool smirking in his chair. Suddenly, I hate him. Hate him because he's got a girlfriend who'll drop the charges. Mine won't speak to me on a bet. Hate him because if we'd met in school, maybe we'd have been friends. Want a sweatshirt? Mario gestures toward a Miami Hurricanes shirt draped across his chair. I don't wear orange, I say, and Mario turns back to the group. I sit shivering through the rest of his lecture. After class, I wait by Mario's desk until everyone else leaves. Leo gives one final smirk. I manage a sneer back. I examine Mario's photographs. There's a smiling woman, a little boy, Mario's family. What could he possibly know about my life? I'm about to ask him, but he speaks first. You want to talk about it? I won't be late again, okay? Fair enough. I'm sure you had a good reason, he smiles, fat cheeks spreading, and gestures toward my dripping notebook. Are you writing in that? Huh? How'd I get off the hook so quickly? Your journal. Oh, yeah. Need to see it? Maybe next week, when it's dry. Mario gathers his things, an umbrella, the sweatshirt, then turns. My Uncle Gustavo, a very wise man, used to say, doesn't take a genius to come in from the rain. I must look at him funny because he adds, need a ride home, son? I've been looking out the window. It's 11 o'clock, but outside is night, with rain pounding worse than before. Still, I say, someone's picking me up. After he leaves, I walk to the train. Much later that day, after I and the journal have dried off, I look at my journal, hoping Judge Lehman doesn't require neatness. It's trashed, wavy and bumpy and smudged, like it's been through a shipwreck. Yet I've dried it off with a hairdryer so I can write in it. Thinking of the car makes me think about Tom. The day of Zach's party, I spent most of the afternoon waxing my car. Tom even helped. Buffing worked his triceps or something, and we were getting tan, too. He'd given up on Ashley, and me, possibly realizing before I did that I was in love with Caitlin. Sometimes Tom knew me better than I knew myself. And sometimes he didn't. Man, you're so lucky to get this car, Tom said. He was always saying stuff like that, and I never corrected him. I just sprayed Armor All and shrugged. Tom went on about what a perfect makeout machine it was. I hoped so. I'd sort of been obsessing about kissing Caitlin that night. Don't get me wrong, I was hardly sweet 16 and never been kissed. I'd probably swapped spit with a dozen girls if you counted Spin the Bottle and a botched attempt to cop a feel off Peyton Baranski playing 7 minutes in heaven in 8th grade. By 9th grade, everyone was pairing off, at least for the evening, and I'd spent many sticky nights playing tonsil hockey on someone's parents' unsupervised sofa. So I'd touched, kissed, and groped, and been touched, kissed, and groped, all meaningless so far. I had a feeling Caitlin's would be the kiss that mattered. That night we had dinner in the Carter's dining room. Tom's family always ate there on weekends. I'd been joining them since grade school. The first time, I'd stood gaping at the china, silver, and flowers, and Tom and his brother wet-combed and shining. It was the kind of spread my father had for clients, not for me. They even dressed for dinner, although Tom and I just wore khakis. Conversation was quiet, smooth as peanut butter. Like every time, Tom's old cocker spaniel, Wimpy, played around my feet. Feeding him table scraps was firmly against the rules, but for some reason it was important to me to be Wimpy's favorite. I used to pretend he was my dog, too. I listened to Mrs. C. describe the antics of little Wynn, Tom's brother's baby, as I slipped Wimpy a huge bite of steak. I got nailed. Nikki, That's why that dog begs, Mrs. Carter said. I knew she was thinking about Labor Day when Wimpy had put his whole face in the potato salad. And that's why he always wants to sleep on your bed when you stay over, Tom added. That always bugged Tom. I apologized, but when they glanced away, I accidentally dropped another piece. Over dinner, Tom's dad tried to talk us into working after school at his office. Tom rolled his eyes. We went through this every month, Mr. Carter trying to encourage Tom's interest in the family firm and Tom avoiding the subject. Finally, Tom's mother rescued him, saying she was sure Tom had the rest of his life to work at a law office. Perhaps over the summer, Tom's father said. Tom pretended not to hear. Did I mention the Iceman has a date? He said between forkfuls of potatoes. Tom was on a carbohydrate kick that week, although the week before it had been proteins. Mrs. Carter turned to me, glad to change the subject. Is it anyone special? I don't know yet. It's our first date. I was lying. Tom mentioned she'd had lunch with us 3 times during the week, and his mom chuckled. And what about you, Thompson? Who's your date? I don't have one, Tom answered before I could say anything. I caught the look on Tom's face. Though I didn't know why, I changed the subject. Did Trey send over any more pictures of little Wynn? I could always charm his mom. Of course there were more pictures, so I told her we'd clear the table while she went and got them. I rose and picked up my plate. Tom followed me into the kitchen. When we were out of earshot, I asked why he hadn't told his parents about Liana. They wouldn't like it. Mom would hear a Cuban name and freak. Tom picked a leftover roll from the basket and downed it in 2 bites. My parents' ancestors came over on the Mayflower, as Mummy likes to mention. They wouldn't want me dating anyone whose people floated in on less exclusive boats. Rafts, he meant, like in the newspaper. Balseros, who swam from Cuba with nothing but the clothes on their backs and rafts made of driftwood and garbage. But what did that have to do with tall, beautiful Liana and her Tommy Hilfiger wardrobe? They wouldn't think that, I said. Your parents are cool, and Liana's no boat person. She doesn't even have an accent. She grew up here. She was born here. It won't matter. Either her family's in the country club or they're not. And if they aren't, they're not good enough for a Carter. Tom grabbed a handful of rice cakes. My brother went to law school and married some cold fish from the social register, even turned down New York law firms to work for my dad. Now I'm supposed to do the same thing, cut my hair and conform. Forget what I want. He didn't just mean Liana. I was sure of that. Only I knew that Tom secretly dreamed of becoming an artist, something else he'd never shared with his parents. His father dreamed of a law firm called Carter, Carter, and Carter, and Tom never told him otherwise. I said, you're not being fair, meaning the art, more than Liana. You should give them a chance. You don't know what they're like. They're not your parents. No, they weren't, unfortunately. I shrugged, guessing I didn't know much about family relations. Leaving Tom in the kitchen, I pushed through the dining room door. The Carters waited, packages of baby pictures spread before them. Mrs. Carter waved me over, pointing at a photo. Isn't he an angel? She said. Look at this one, with the bunny ears. I nodded, but I was back to imagining Caitlin's kiss. January 21. Key Biscayne High. Between Mario's class and writing in my journal, I'm still going to school. Everything's the same as always here, just not for me. The school office rearranged Caitlin's schedule, so she seems like a figment of my imagination. No classes together, barely passing in the hallway. God, I miss her. I try sometimes to see her, making it look accidental. Like today, I go down where my locker was, BC, before Caitlin, on the first floor by the Fruitopia machine. She's there with all my ex-friends, laughing with Tom and St. O'Connor, her blonde hair barely visible between their massive forms. Saint is Key's star quarterback and also Tom's new best friend. What could he have said to make Caitlin laugh? When I walk by, she stops laughing. Her eyes meet mine, but she makes the type of sound you'd get seeing a palmetto bug or some other vermin. Tom sees me, too. His eyes are the same as always, and for a second, I think he'll smile, say hello. Like maybe things will just get back to normal. No way. Tom slips a hand onto Caitlin's shoulder. Don't worry, Kat. Saint and I, we won't let him hurt you. The 3 of them glide as one toward the science wing. I walk the other way, through the throng of what used to be my friends. They ignore me. After everything happened with Caitlin, me hitting her, the restraining order, everyone took Caitlin's side. Didn't surprise me. Except for Tom. Tom, who knew me better than anyone, who should have stood by me. I glance at Tom's back as they walk away, his fingers still on Caitlin's shoulder. How could he just toss a 10-year friendship over this? He wouldn't even talk about it. I guess it's like they say, when the going gets tough, your best friend flakes on you. So who needs him? I should be glad he's not around. I walk into English class, heads turn. It's a small group, all honor students, and usually they're too busy yakking about the next brain bowl or debate team bagel sale to notice much. Today, silence. Every eye turns, in sync, from my face to the blackboard. I look too, then turn away. Someone's written, "Go, Nick! Beat your girlfriend!" I walk, seconds multiplying like amoebas, to my desk. Elsa, Caitlin's best friend, glares at me from under her beret. She has the nerve to wear that and look down on me? The rest just stare. Amy Patterson, who's had a crush on me since fifth grade, pretends to be fascinated with her grammar book. Trust me, she's faking it. But that's the closest anyone comes to taking my side. The desks in here are arranged in a U shape, so Miss Higgins won't have to navigate rows in her motorized wheelchair. My seat faces the board. I shove my backpack under the chair, grip my desk sides, and stare at the green board until the letters blur and it's all black. I hear a voice. "I wrote it, Nick. Why don't you hit me?" It's Elsa. And another girl, a new girl whose name I don't know. "I wrote it, Nick. Teach me a lesson." Derek Wayne from across the room. "I wrote it. Or do you only hit women?" I want to bolt. Last week, Mario said, if you think you're about to lose it, take a walk. I can't. I hold my desk like a life raft. If I go ballistic, they'll think they're right. Be cool. Mario's deep breathing exercises and his rules rise unbidden in my mind. Cool. I think of icebergs, of ski trips with Tom's family when I'd refused to wear long underwear. I think of Leo. I think of breathing underwater. Finally, through the blur of thoughts and anger, I see Miss Higgins wheel through the doorway. A second later, she notices the blackboard. She sees, but it's too high for her to erase. She faces us. "Who wrote this?" She scrutinizes us, acknowledging me before moving on. I keep breathing. Higgins tries again. "Will the creative writer please identify him or herself?" No one. Her eyes scan the room and finally land on Elsa. "Please erase it, Elsa." Elsa hesitates, starts to speak. I say, "Leave it." Miss Higgins' eyes meet mine with a look I can't figure out. "Very well, but whoever wrote it neglected the comma." She reaches above her head and chalks one between "go" and my name. Whether she's deflecting attention or digging me a deeper hole, I laugh with the others. It sounds real. Then, to complete the illusion, I smile, raise my hand like nothing's wrong. When Higgins calls on me, I point to my copy of Wuthering Heights. "Miss Higgins, in Chapter 3, when Kathy's at the window, is that supposed to be a ghost, or is it Lockwood still dreaming?" Higgins raises a sparse eyebrow. "What do you think, Nicholas?" I can't go on like this, that's what I think. Losing Caitlin was bad enough without everyone hating me. And suddenly my thoughts return to Tom. Talk to Tom. Years of friendship must be worth something. If I could only get Tom to forgive me, everyone else would follow. And with Tom's help, maybe I could get Caitlin back, too. But I say, "I guess it was a ghost. Like, maybe if people are in love, like Kathy and Heathcliff, nothing can separate them. Not even death." Beside me, Elsa snickers, but I ignore her. I finger the ring in my pocket and reach under my desk for the journal. I don't care about English. I just want to remember when things were better. Like that first night with Caitlin. The driveway to Zach's house was 2 blocks long, and since we were late, we walked it. 5 minutes of gravel crunching under sandals. Finally, the trees parted, and Caitlin gasped. I let myself grin. The invitation was a lot of what I had to offer Kat. I got invited to all the cool parties. I'd hoped she'd be impressed. The house was huge, white, like the Disney version of a southern plantation. Caitlin looked from the house to my face. I didn't know Zach lived someplace like this. I've known him all my life, but I never thought he was... rich. She said the word like it burned her throat. I snuck closer, still unready to make the grab for her hand. I told her Zach's family had just hit it big the year before. That explains why Zach blows off his old friends, she said, then added in response to Tom and Leanna's questioning looks. He started hanging out with you guys, and now he won't talk to me or Elsa, people he's known since kindergarten. I told her no one really liked Schaefer. We only let him hang with us because he had a hot tub and minimal adult supervision. Caitlin said, I get it, but for once, I'd like to be the one blowing people off instead of the one being blown off. A noble goal, I said. I threw open the front door and led her into a white-and-glass living room big enough for a pep rally. We walked through French doors to the patio. The hot tub was full of people in bathing suits that might come off before the evening was over. Almost everyone else circled the inkblot-shaped pool, though a few lurked in a corner smoking grass. I avoided that area. One thing I don't do is drugs. Tom patted my backpack. What's in here? I told him beer, wondering if Caitlin would disapprove. Maybe I hoped she would. I mean, I didn't want a girl who drank. Still, I added, I just wrote cerveza on Rose's shopping list, and here it is. You the man, Tom laughed, then added to Leanna, Rose is the housekeeper. What is she, Nick, number 25? 32, I corrected. So hard to find good help, Leanna said. I ignored her, watching Peyton walk by in a bikini that barely covered her nipples. She had rings on her toes and in her belly button, and St. O'Connor, Key's Neanderthal star quarterback, followed, dragging his tongue on the ground. How could he let Peyton wear that in public? Caitlin, I noticed, wore a long skirt with a white linen shirt knotted over her tank swimsuit. Good, though I wouldn't have minded seeing her in an outfit like Peyton's. I didn't want anyone else to. I swung my arm, fingers touching hers. For an instant, I saw her shiver. I grabbed her hand. She laughed, then smiled at me, and even in the darkness, I felt my skin broil. Want to go swimming? I asked, figuring a shock of cold water would do me good. If you do, she said. I don't care. I led her to a stone bench, still cradling her fingers like feathers. Why was I so jacked up just holding this girl's hand? I told myself to chill. Caitlin's eyes scanned the patio. Good. I hate bathing suits. At camp, I always thought people were staring. And the girls here are so beautiful. I squeezed her fingers. It was so cool that she didn't know how pretty she was. When I found my nerve, I said, You're the most beautiful girl here. She rewarded me with a smile. We stared at each other, me palming a Bud Light can until I felt a big paw on my shoulder. I smelled Doritos, saw red hair, teeth coated with orange cheese crap. St. O'Connor. I put the can down. St. raised a big arm to high-five, then clasped my hand instead. I knew he was just looking for beer. I pushed my lips into a smile and withdrew my hand from St.'s and the other, more reluctantly, from Caitlin's. I handed St. a can, offering Caitlin another. She shook her head. St. looked like he'd just noticed her. Caitlin McCourt, he whistled, two fingers to his mouth. She turned away, giggling. Man, you are one hot babe. You must have lost 30 pounds at least. Thank you, Patrick. Patrick? Patrick? I felt my jaw clench. I'd never suspected O'Connor had a real name. How did Caitlin know? I chugged my beer, wanting to tell him to leave Caitlin alone. She was mine. But O'Connor was a football player who could pick his teeth with my arms. I asked him if Peyton wanted one. Saint said, Nah, she don't drink nothing with calories. I'll take hers, though. Like I was buying drinks for this Saint Bernard. Maybe he figured I'd just hand over Caitlin, too. But I pulled a beer out, yelled, Catch! And hurled it over O'Connor's head so it splashed into the pool. Saint stood, blinking. Then he turned to watch it sink. I said, Nice catch. Makes me glad you're on my team. Yeah, great throw, Andreas. I said I didn't claim to be a star quarterback, and Saint smirked like it was a good thing I didn't. I pointed toward the drowning Bud. Mind getting that? Be a sin to waste it. Saint nodded at Caitlin, then dove for his prey. I thumbed open another can, pool sounds buzzing my ears like a traffic jam. Finally I said, How'd you know O'Connor's name? Caitlin laughed. Patrick? I've always called him that. We had Sunday school together before I quit to join the church choir. I rolled the icy beer in my hand. You like him? What do you mean? Figure it out. Her eyes widened. Me and Pat O'Connor? That's so not possible. I mean, he used to burp and blow it on me. Her blue eyes focused on my face. Below, Saint and Peyton played chicken with Tom and Leanna. Peyton fighting dirty, trying to pull off Leanna's bikini top, Leanna's shrieks echoing off the patio roof. But I heard Caitlin. "Besides, I like you, Nick." The noise stopped. The ice melted, and I regained my sense of taste. I looked at her and said the first thing that popped into my head. "You're in church choir?" She made a face. "I bet you think that's so geeky." I shook my head. "No, it suited